नमो विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी के नामने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रमण ज्ञानंद अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर जॉइनिंग टुडे सेशन। वी हैव बीन डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम द seventh chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The chapter is titled as The Killing of the Demon Pranavarta. So, we discussed the pastime of the killing of Putana. So, after Putana, so Putana killing happened when Krishna was 6 days old. So, now the next demon that he kills is Shakatasura. He is not indicated as a demon directly in Bhagavatam so explicitly, but this is mentioned from the other Puranas and the Acharya's quote. So it is mentioned that then after this Parikshit Maharaj mentions that I have great attraction to all the avatara katha, but I have special attraction to Krishna's childhood pastimes. Hearing which, he says that yat shrinvato apaiti aratir vitrishna satvam tashuddhat achirena pumsah bhaktir harau tat purushecha sakyam tadevaharam vadamanyaseche. He says you should speak more about Krishna's childhood pastimes, because by hearing these pastimes, very quickly one overcomes apaiti and atrishna, a kind of indifference and a lack of taste. Is destroyed by hearing these pastimes. Yat shrinvato apaiti aratir vitrishna satvam cha shuddhati, and the heart becomes cleansed by hearing these pastimes. Achirena, very quickly, and development of prema, bhaktir harau, and tat purushecha sakyam, and friendship with the other devotees. All of this happens just by hearing Krishna Katha. So please speak Krishna Katha, especially the childhood pastimes of Krishna. And then he says, please describe other wonderful pastimes of Krishna who appeared like a human and performed human-like pastimes. So he's requesting Parikshit Shukadeva Goswami to speak more on this subject matter. Shukadeva Goswami continues. He says, one day, the gopis were celebrating Krishna's Uttana ceremony when he would actually turn around by himself. On the day when there was a conjunction of moon and Krishna's Janma Nakshatra, which is Rohini. So on that particular day, the gopis were celebrating Krishna's Uttana ceremony when he was turning around. After receiving the Brahmanas and worshipping them and giving in charity, Mother Yashoda realized that Krishna was feeling sleepy. So she lay down with him on a cot which was under a cart, huge cart. So she lay down with him. His eyes became very, very afflicted with sleep. One could see that he was feeling sleepy. So she put him to sleep, and just so that he will feel safe and nice, she lay down right next to Krishna, and she was also waiting till he would go to sleep. And Mother Yashoda, then she got up and she became busy in taking care of the guests, and she did not hear the crying of Krishna, who was actually hungry, sthanarthi. He was hungry for Mother Yashoda's milk. So Krishna became little angry and he kicked his legs upwards. His legs, even though they were so small and so soft, like we see, but still it kicked the cart and it turned over and the wheel separated from the axle and all the metal vessels in that fell down. And they were no ordinary metal vessels. They were metal vessels which were made of gold and silver, very heavy and dense, you know. So it is mentioned that in Krishna Leela, even though he shows extraordinary activities, but there is no, he does not, you know, become huge in size like Trivikrama, like it is mentioned in, we were discussing yesterday in Kaliya's pastime in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Krishna is standing on the hoods of Kaliya. As soon as the gopis come, he extends his hands and picks up the gopis and puts them on top of Kaliya's head. And Krishna is standing. Kaliya is in the middle of the lake. Kaliya is in the middle of the lake. And the gopis were in the shore. And Krishna extends his hands. And how can from the middle of the lake a person of normal human size pick up someone from the shore, you know? But Krishna does not increase his size. Not that his hands become huge and long. It is still the same size, but still Krishna is able to pick it up. This is Krishna's inconceivable potency. So in Vraja, Krishna does not change his form and become like huge and obviously show his extraordinary opulence. He does not have to do all of that. Without showing much, he gets it done. And Krishna, even though a small child's feet would not actually reach till the cart, but still Krishna, without extending his feet, it touched the cart and it toppled down. And one explanation that is given, of course, it is mentioned that his foot did not extend and his feet were still soft like butter. So unlike Vamana, he did not grow in size, and unlike Narasimha, his nails did not become hard like a thunderbolt to tear off the body of Hiranyakashipu. So this rare display of power by Krishna, which does not contradict the sweetness of his childhood pastimes, shows the completeness of Shri Krishna in Vrindavan. Completeness here means completeness of his sweetness. There is no compromise of sweetness, even in exhibiting some Aishwarya in killing the demons. Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj and other Vrajavasis saw this wonderful situation and were wondering how the cart collapsed by itself. But they could not find the cause. You know, they were wondering how this could have collapsed by itself. So while they were wondering in this way, the small children came to them and they told, look, this crying Krishna, he kicked it. And there is no doubt about it. Okay. Etad na samshayah, there is no doubt. He only kicked this. So the children spoke like this. And the Vrajavasis, but the Vrajavasis unaware of Krishna's power, they just neglected these statements as childish talk, you know. They did not believe. And suspecting a demon attack, Mother Yashoda picked up and fed Krishna and had the Brahmanas chant the mantras for his safety, you know, Swastyayana mantras. He made them chant. And after that, it took many, many strong and stout gopas to pick up the vessels and set it up as before. The Brahmanas performed the ceremony to appease the bad planet or the demon. So the cart was then repaired and put in its original position. And so actually the cowherd men, the gopas, they worshipped the cart because the cart was one of their main possessions. Because it was a storehouse of their wealth. So they considered that to be an abode of wealth, you know, an abode of Lakshmi. So it was very auspicious for them. So they actually literally worshipped that cart. And it is mentioned from one of the Puranas. Was it Brahmanda Purana? Which Purana was it? It is mentioned that there was a demon there, Shakatasura. In just one of the commentaries, just there is a very passing mention of that being Shakatasura. But otherwise, it is not very clear. The Brahmanda Puran states that because a heavy demon entered the cart, the wheel sank in the earth and the cart's height decreased. Okay. So Brahmanda Puran mentions, Bhagavatam does not officially mention that this was a demon, Shakatasura. But the other Puranas say so, our Acharyas kind of mention it. Otherwise, this is not an official demon according to Bhagavatam. Okay, this is where we ended our discussion on Tuesday. Before we continue with the pastime, when very soon Trinavarta is going to come. But before that, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add, you can please go ahead. Okay, if there is none, let's continue our discussion. Okay. So Shukadev Goswami is continuing his narration of Krishna's childhood pastimes to Parikshit Maharaj. So he says, Yesu yandrata dhambersha himsa manavi varjitaha natesham satyashilanam ashisho vifalakritaha iti balakamadaya samar yajur upakritaihi jalaihi पवित्रौषधीभिर् अभिषिच्य द्विजोत्तमैः वाचयित्वा स्वस्तेयनं नन्दगोपः समाहितः उत्त्वा चाग्निं द्विजातिभ्यः प्रादादन्नं महागुणम्. When the Brahmanas are free from envy, untruthfulness, unnecessary pride, grudges, disturbance by the opulence of others, and false prestige, their blessings never go in vain. Na tesham satyashilanam ashisho vifalakrita. So, the blessings of such brahmanas never go false. Iti, considering in this way, nandagopaha samahitaha balakam adaya. Nandagopa, Nanda Maharaj soberly took Krishna on his lap. Vijottamaihi samarid yajur upakritaihi, and invited such truthful brahmanas to perform a ritualistic ceremony according to the holy hymns of the Samaveda, Rigveda and Yajurveda. Vachayitva swasteyanam, and while the hymns were being chanted, pavitra aushadibir jalaihi abhishichya, he bathed the child with the water mixed with pure herbs, putvacha agnim, and after performing a fire ceremony, dvijatibhyah pradat annam mahat mahagunam, and he fed the brahmanas with first class grains and other food. So Nanda Maharaj, considering that qualified brahmanas blessings come true, engage such brahmanas to perform the fire sacrifices, reading of the Vedic mantras etc. And then he fed them nicely. So it is mentioned, knowing that the blessings of Brahmanas were good for his child's welfare, Nanda spoke this verse. Mana means pride. The blessings of a qualified Brahmanas but must bear fruit. So Krishna was sprinkled with water mixed with Sarvaushadhi and Mahaushadhi and purified by mantras from the Sama, Rig and Yajurveda. Nanda Maharaj performed a sacrifice and then fed the Brahmanas tasty aromatic food, Mahagunam. Maybe he used basmati rice and other such things. So then he says, Gavah sarva gunopeta vasasra grukma malinihi atmajabhyuddayartaya radate chanvayunjata. Atmaja abhyudaya artaya. Atmaja, son, abhyudaya for his welfare, artaya for the purpose of. Nanda Maharaj, for the sake of the affluence of his own son Krishna. Okay, so that he becomes quite wealthy. Pradat gavaha vasaha srag rukma malini. Pradat, he gave to the Brahmanas. Gavaha, cows, vasaha, who were well dressed, srag, wearing nice garlands, rukma, is gold, malinihi, and golden necklace, rukma malini, gold necklaces, flower garlands, garments, and gold necklaces. And such cows were given in charity to the Brahmanas. Sarva gunopeta, and those cows fully qualified to give ample milk, were given to the Brahmanas in charity. And the Brahmanas accepted them and bestowed blessings upon the whole family and especially upon Krishna. Techa Anvayunjata. Nanda Maharaj gave qualified cows in charity. And in return, the Brahmanas blessed Krishna. So Nanda Maharaj gave cows endowed with all qualities, which means they gave abundant milk. The word Anu, then the Brahmanas accepted the cows. Anu Yunjata. After all these things, they accepted charity. So when they completed their role, only then they accepted charity. Okay. Yeah, just give me 1 second. Okay. Then Vipra mantra vido yuktas tairya proktas tatashishah. Tanishphala bhavishyanti na kadachit apisputam. Vipra, the Brahmanas, mantra vidaha, who were completely expert in chanting the Vedic hymns, yuktaha, they were all yogis fully equipped with mystic powers. Tair yaha prokta tata ashishaha ta sputam na kadachit api nishphala bhavishyanti. And whatever blessings they spoke were certainly never fruitless. So these Brahmanas were qualified yogis whose blessings were never fruitless. So Srila Vishnu Chakra Thakur says, the Brahmanas are described here as Yukta, which means they were great yogis, and thus whatever blessings they gave would come true. So in this way, his Uttana ceremony got over. So according to Bhagavatam, this is a description of Krishna's Uttana ceremony. There is no official mention of Shakatasura Vada here, according to Bhagavatam, even though the other Puranas do mention that in that Shakata, there was an Asura who was named as Shakatasura and he was killed by Krishna, like that it is mentioned. Okay. So this brings us, okay, yes, Radha Pramod Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu.
Bro, actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he mentions Anathasna, he takes Shaktasura as one of the demons. That means he's referring to other Puranas.
Yeah. Even Vishnu Chakra Thakur mentions that, Brahmanda Puran mentions that, there was a demon here, like that. But he does not say, Bhagavatam, what I meant is, Bhagavatam does not explicitly mention it, but the other Puranas do indicate. And how do we know other Puranas indicate? Because our own Acharyas are quoting here.
And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he actually, he is, and of course, even Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur disciples also, they are commenting and they are taking from reference from other Puranas and even, I think, Garga Samhita also they are taking reference.
Who?
When we see the explanation. That means they are, of course, not everything, but something they are taking reference and trying to, especially Bhaktivinoda Thakur is taking reference from other Puranas. Maybe it is helpful for us to understand, that is the reason.
Yeah. So when Acharyas take something from other Puranas, then we know what they are taking is actually in line with the conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, I mean, this is just a detail. When we are especially talking about Siddhanta and other such things, here what I mentioned is, even though Bhagavatam does not explicitly say, our Acharyas quote from Brahmanda Puran that there was a demon in this particular cart, like that. So of course, we are quoting from our Acharyas, and Vishnu Chakra Guru himself says, you know, there was a demon there in that cart.
Yeah, yes.
Okay. So sometimes this argument is given. You know, I have heard this argument. And personally, when I was in a conversation with one devotee, he said, look, our Acharyas have quoted from Mahabharata. So that means they must have read Mahabharata. They must have studied Mahabharata. So which means they are suggesting that we also study Mahabharata. You know, this was an argument that was given. Of course, this has nothing to do with what Radha Pramod Prabhu mentioned, but just that it, I just got reminded here. Yeah, maybe. But if they wanted us to read it as a part of our spiritual nourishment, they would have commented upon it. So sometimes here and there, our Acharyas may pick up certain stories, certain incidences, or certain philosophical points also they may quote from particular Puranas. If you see in Bhaktirasamrita Chandra, there is a lot of quotations from Skanda Purana. I mean, does it mean that our Acharyas want us to read Skanda Purana also? Not necessarily like that. So basically, whatever they have commented upon, that is why Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipunav Sad Dharma Samstapakav. So they were experts in reading Nana Shastras, and that is why they could establish Sadharma from those Shastras. If we are also similarly experts from Nana Shastras, then, and if we are very clear with the Sadharma, then we may also probably read. And in reading them, we may also understand, okay, what is something which will nourish my faith in Srimad Bhagavatam and what will not. So, anyways, so this is something I was just thinking. So this argument seems not a very logical argument to me, that they quoted from Mahabharata, which means they want us to read from Mahabharata. That's not a very, very logical argument to me, you know. So I would say rather whatever granthas they have commented upon, that's what they are indicating that they want us to read. Rather than their quotation there, they quote from, you know, small things from different things, books whose name also we have not heard. But if they have not generally commented upon it, then it's not at least a primary read for us, for sure. At least that much we can tell for sure. So, anyways. Yeah, regarding Garga Samhita also, there is no official, I mean, at least as of now, our primary acharyas, you know, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Jiva Goswami and all, they have not, as far as I have not read so extensively, except for the Bhagavatam commentaries, they have not so extensively, or I don't at all remember them quoting from Garga Samhita. Yeah, some of the later acharyas may have quoted from that, I do not know. Yeah, maybe some particular things they may have quoted, which may be in line with the conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam. Like that. That is possible. I am not denying that fact. Okay. Yes, Keshav Priyamati.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam. Prabhuji, like in Bhagavatam, there is many, in all the pastimes, Prabhuji, Yashodama, she always prays to demigods, like Brahmanas are coming and reciting to safeguard Krishna. So Krishna has come here to establish Dharma. The Dharma means Bhakti Yoga, like devotion only, no, Prabhuji. But all his pastimes, it looks like people are following Varnashrama Dharma, but for us, no, Prabhuji, like we have a discussion that for us, we are advised to follow only Bhakti Yoga, where following Varnashrama means becomes a mixed devotion. How to understand this, Prabhuji? Like in Treta Yuga also, Lord Ram's pastimes also, there are many activities of Varnashrama Dharma has been explained, Prabhuji. We say it is for Loka Sangraha. But when Lord does something as in Varnashrama and as a Loka Sankraka, then naturally people will follow that, no, Prabhuji. Then we'll call it as mixed devotion, no, Prabhuji.
No. Actually, people will also understand and follow. Now, the Lord did so many things. The Lord did Rasleela also. Will people follow?
No, Prabhuji, but Loka Sangraha means it is for him, for us to follow. That's what
Loka third chapter. Also, Loka Sangraha also, people will accept they according to their adhikar only.
Oh.
According to their adhikar only, they will follow. So ultimately, in every if everything that the Lord does is sufficient, then the acharyas would not come to explain amongst many things which the Lord did, what is supposed to be worshipped and what is supposed to be followed.
Mm-hmm.
And what is supposed to be followed by whom. So then actually the acharyas requirement will become redundant. You know. So therefore our acharyas say, oh, this is something which is and of course Loka Sangraha means 99.99% of people is Loka only, you know. So devotees are very rare. Practitioners of pure devotional service are very rare. Definitely when Krishna or Lord Ramachandra perform certain activities, amongst those activities which is actually relevant for practicing pure devotees, which is meant for mixed devotees, the acharyas actually come and explain. So,
The role of acharyas is very important. That's what you're trying to convey. The Lord is common for everyone, for even atheists or atheists, for karmis, gyanis, yogis, like for he is common. So he does many things to attract all type of people, but when we are interested in particular type of like we, when we really wanted to perform pure devotion, we come under instruction of Acharya. So only the Acharya's instruction we are supposed to take. Is it, Premji?
Yeah, yeah. Like for example, people say that, look, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I am just trying to search for that particular this thing. So they say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed, say, Shraddha ceremony.
Mm.
So he went to Gaya and performed Shraddha for his Pitrus. So therefore, he is showing that devotees also should perform. So because there are many things, see what I am telling is, whatever they did, should it be followed? So the point is, why they did what they did, you know, that is that has to be understood. So, and otherwise, I am just searching for it. In Bhakti, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sastakur in his commentary, exactly in that, let me search in Chaitanya Bhagavat. I will every time.
Yeah, the other day you were explaining this, Prabhuji. We discussed this already.
Yeah, we discussed this, but I wish to read it once more. Because how I want to see, you know, how people can misunderstand. Just one second. Because just because the Lord performed something, is it that we are supposed to perform it? You know, that's a very critical thing that we wish we should be understanding. Okay.
Generally we understand he is setting an example, no, Prabhuji. Generally, that's what
people
understand.
Yeah, but example for whom?
That point is right.
Example for whom? So where is she, Chaitanya Bhagavat? I am just trying to search for Chaitanya Bhagavat. Writings of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur. Writings of Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur. Writings of other Acharyas. Okay, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. No, I'm not able to see Chaitanya Bhagavat. Anyways, so in this Chaitanya Bhagavat commentary, he writes that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went and performed the Shraddha ceremony at Gaya to basically bewilder the smarthas. So, you know, that's the essence of that particular commentary. Then, like that, there are so many explanations, you know. Like, just because the Lord did something, but that particular activity of the Lord was for what purpose? For whom? For whom was that thing actually performed? Was it to, how do you know? Who decides, okay, the Lord did this, this is to actually inspire the practitioners of pure devotional service to practice. Who decides this?
Mm.
It is the Acharyas only, right?
Acharyas.
So ultimately, you have to see, go to that explanation. Recently, someone was giving a class on Pitrupaksha, you know, how it is important for devotees to follow Pitrukarya. You know, this was recently a class which was being given. You know, how it is important, the importance of following Pitrupaksha and following Pitrukarya and all that. And the examples that were quoted was, please remember this and tell me, let's go to that particular section and search for it. The examples that were quoted was, Prahlad Narasimhadev asked his father to perform Hiranyakashipu's final rites, Shraddha Karya. This was one example that was quoted. Another was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu going to Gaya. And the third thing that was mentioned was Krishna in his in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he tells Arjuna that these Lukta Pindodaka Kriya, the Pinda Kriya and Udaka Kriya, all these things have to be followed. Like that Krishna tells in the first chapter. These are at least the three examples that were quoted, you know, by the devotee who was sharing. So Now let's see, you know, how misleading it is. You see, let us go to these three sections in our Bhagavatam and see what the Acharyas have mentioned about this. Okay. So like that, you know, and anything what the Acharyas say, we will accept. Okay. So what were the three? What was the first thing that I mentioned? Prahlad Maharaj, right?
Prahlad Maharaj.
Okay. I will search for what is that particular this thing. I am just going to just give me 1 second. Okay. This is 7.10.22. Let's go to 7.10.22 and see what the Acharyas say about this. This is Prahlad Maharaj's case. 7.10.22, Canto 7, 10th chapter, 22nd verse. Okay. So, I will read. Let us zoom it a little bit. Okay. Okay. Now, okay, before that, okay. So here, the verse is Kurutvam Pretakrityani Pituhu Putasya Sarvashah Madangas Parshanenanga Lokan Yasati Suprajaha. You are able to see the screen?
Yeah, Prabhuji, we can.
Okay. So this is 7.10.22. This is Narasimhadev telling Prahlad Maharaj. So he says, my dear child, this is Prabhupada's translation. My dear child, your father has already been purified just by the touch of my body at the time of his death. Nonetheless, the duty of a son is to perform the Shraddha's ritualistic ceremony after his father's death so that his father may be promoted to a planetary system where he may become a good citizen and a devotee. Okay. And Srila Vishwanatha Chakradhakur's translation, he says, my dear child, perform the funeral rites of your father already purified completely by the touch of my body. Having the best son, he will achieve the best planets. Vishwanatha Chakradhakur's commentary. Since your father has been purified by the touch of my body, do not fear for his sins. But do the funeral rites simply for maintaining custom. Okay. Now, then next verse. Next verse. He says, Pitriyam cha sthanam atishta yatoktam brahmavadibihi mayyaveshya manastata kuru karmani matparaha. Okay. After performing the ritualistic ceremonies, take charge of your father's kingdom. Sit upon the throne and do not be disturbed by materialistic activities. Please keep your mind fixed upon me. Without transgressing the injunctions of the Vedas, as a matter of formality, you may perform your particular duties. Srila Vishwanatha Chakradhakur says, O son, take charge of your father's kingdom as directed by the Brahmanas. Fixing your mind upon me, dedicated to me, perform your duties. So now, here you see, Srila Vishwanatha Chakradhakur writes, though you as my devotee are not supposed to do karmas, by my order, do karmas to maintain the custom, but be dedicated to me. Without faith in those karmas, matpara.
Yes.
By thinking of me, even if you do not do the karmas, they are performed. Read this line. By thinking of me, even if you do not do the karmas, they are performed, which means it is considered to be performed. So do not worry. So now see what Prabhupada writes here. When one becomes a devotee, he no longer has any duty to the Vedic regulative principles. One has many duties to perform, but if one becomes a fully devoted to the Lord, he no longer has any such obligations. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Devarshi Bhutaptranam Pitranam Nakinkaro Nayam Ranicharajan Sarvatmanaya Sharanam Sharanyam Gato Mukundam Parihitya Kartam. One who has fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord is no longer a debtor to his forefathers, the great sages, human society, the common man, or any living entity.
Prabhuji, here only, Prabhuji, that fully surrendered only, that point only.
I already discussed this.
Yeah, you fully cleared, Prabhuji, you cleared it. Yeah, Prabhuji, you cleared, but that point, when if we tell to devotees, this point they are telling, Prabhuji, fully surrendered, so you are not fully surrendered, no, so you are
doing. So now my question is, if I am not fully surrendered, if I am not fully surrendered, should I try to fully surrender or should I partially surrender to the devatas, rishis, bhuta, apta, etc.? What is your recommendation?
No, Guruji, I should try to fully surrender if I really want to go back home.
Yeah, like that. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead nonetheless advised Prahlad Maharaj to follow the regulative principles. For since he was going to be the king, others would follow his example. So because he was a king and most of the people who would be following him are people of Karma Nishtha, therefore he had that responsibility to set the right example for his ordinary citizens. Thus Lord Narasimhadev advised Prahlad Maharaj to engage in his political duties so that people would become Lord's devotees. Okay. Anyways.
The kings and God, they have a responsibility, Prabhuji. I understand now. Like God is like Samoham Sarva Bhudeshu. He is for everyone. So he has responsibility to teach every class of people. And kings, as you said, they also have a responsibility to take care of all class of people. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he comes, like he's come here to give pure devotion only, no, Prabhuji. So what responsibility also, he has?
Also.
No, Prabhuji, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra chanting and following, like Mahaprabhu, preaches.
When the Lord comes, there is no one specific duty. Multiple things are accomplished. When we go to perform a duty, we don't even perform one duty properly. But when the Lord comes, he can perform multiple duties, even though, you know, so that is why in that particular purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, he went to Gaya to perform this Pitru Sharda to bewilder the Smartha devotees. To bewilder the smartas, like that it is mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So you read, see here, and then he writes, Yadyad Acharati Shrestha, he quotes, and then Prabhupada writes, one should not be attached to any materialistic activities, but a devotee may perform such activities as an example to show the common man that one should not deviate from the Vedic injunctions. Again, the word may. That is why I was mentioning. When something which is favorable, when you make it mandatory or non-negotiable, then it becomes mixed devotional service.
Correct.
So, then, okay, Prahlad Maharaj. This was Prahlad Maharaj. What else did I quote?
Chaitanya
Mahaprabhu. Yeah, that we already saw. I will search for that and then I will pass it on. And the third thing that we saw was actually quoting from Krishna, you know, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in the first chapter, Lupta Pindodaka Kriya, you have to do Pinda Kriya and Udaka Kriya, like that. So, here, this Prabhupada, let's see what he says in verse number, okay, this is which one? This was verse number 141. Okay. Let's go to 1.41 purport. Let's see what Prabhupada writes here. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 141. Okay. So, I will share the screen. You see here, this was also one of the verses that was quoted. Sankaro narakayaiva kulagnanam kulasyacha patanti pitarohi esham lupta pindodaka kriya. An increase of unwanted population certainly causes hellish life, both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performance of offering them food and water are entirely stopped. So this was quoted to say, look, even Krishna says that offering these pinda and udaka should not be stopped, otherwise they will go to hell. Okay, so this was quoted. So now let's see what the acharyas say about this. Srila Prabhupada says, according to the rules and regulations of fruitive activities, of course, this is spoken by Arjuna, not by Krishna. According to the rules and regulations of fruitive activities, there is a need to offer periodical food and water to the forefathers of the family. This offering, again, you see the usage. according to the rules and regulations of fruitive activities. This offering is performed by worship of Vishnu, because eating the remnants of food offered to Vishnu can deliver one from all kinds of sinful actions. Sometimes the forefathers may be suffering from various types of sinful reactions, and sometimes some of them cannot even acquire a gross material body and are forced to remain in subtle body as ghosts. Thus, when remnants of prasadam food are offered to forefathers by descendants, the forefathers are released from ghostly or other kinds of miserable life. Such help rendered to forefathers is a family tradition, and those who are not in devotional life are required to perform such rituals. Point to be noted.
Yes.
Such help rendered to forefathers is a family tradition, and those who are not in devotional life are required to perform such rituals. One who is engaged in devotional life is not required to perform such actions. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of miseries. It is stated in Bhagavatam, Devarshi Bhutaptranam Pitranam Nakinkaronayam Dunicharaja. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, gives up all kinds of obligation and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations with demigods, sages, etc. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So not that he does not feel obligation. For a devotee, that obligation is fulfilled by his worship of the Supreme Lord. When he worships the Supreme Lord, automatically the obligation is fulfilled. And often the verse that is quoted is Yata taror mula nishechanena tripyanti tatskanda bujopashaka. So now, interestingly, if you see, yes, externally from one point of view, you know, Narasimha Dev did say, ask Prahlad Maharaj to perform the Sharda rites for his father. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did go to Gaya to perform Sharda rites. And if you see, Arjuna did say that, if you fight and kill the people without the elders there, you know, all this Pinda Kriya, Udaka Kriya, everything will be stopped. And, the ancestors will suffer in hell. This was all there. But then suddenly will you jump and conclude that because of this, you see, this Pitru Paksha pujas and everything and rituals should be done. Is that the conclusion? Just read what the acharyas say. You know, see what they are saying there. In the, you know, if you have managed to read till the translation, please read ahead and read the purport also. It's there in the purport. Right? So therefore certain things are there. But we should understand what is mentioned based on what the acharyas say. So therefore, yes, Lord Ramachandra did a few things. Krishna did a few things. And here, Nanda Maharaj. See, Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, the Vrajavasis, what they do, they are not bound by anything. For them, for Krishna's safety, they will do anything, because they are not karma para, or they are not jnana para, they are actually Krishna para. They are not dedicated to karma, jnana, yoga, anything. For them, they are dedicated to Krishna. So if someone says, do Shirshasana for 100 hours continuously for Krishna's safety, the whole of Raja will be doing Shirshasana for 100 hours for Krishna's safety. That does not mean that they have dedicated their life for yoga. You know, such people are completely pure, unalloyed devotees of Krishna. For that, whatever is needed, they will do. You say, go and worship Katyayani, I will worship. Why? Because if that is what is going to please Krishna, I will worship. So they will give up all kinds of logic. If it pleases Krishna, whatever pleases Krishna, we will do. And they will not sit and read the Shastras and try to understand, is it pure devotional service? They are already spontaneous. They have the highest level of spontaneous devotional service. So therefore, from their actions, you cannot, if you are not intelligent enough, you cannot understand what should be done, what should not be done. That is why Jiva Goswami, in the section on Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, he says, yes, in Raganuga Sadhana, one gets inspired to follow in the footsteps of the Vrajavasis, but that inspiration to follow in the footsteps of the Vrajavasis should be under the guidance of a bona fide guru, because yes, not everything the Vrajavasis do, we can follow. For example, he gives example also. For example, the Vrajavasis did not accept a spiritual master. The Vrajavasis did not worship Tulsi Devi. The Vrajavasis did not follow Ekadashi Vrata. The Vrajavasis, worshipped Katyayani Devi and Surya and all those things. So he says that this does not, Raganuga Sadhaka does not mean he will follow all these things. He will stop worshipping Tulsi Devi. He will stop following Ekadashi Vrata. No. So that is something that they do out of their pure spontaneous love. But that does not mean we are expected to follow it. So that is why it is very critical to have the guidance of the Guru and Acharyas.
The problem is devotees misunderstand that our acharyas advise us to follow all these things. That is the problem, Prabhuji. Like, that is the misunderstanding here. We also, devotees also follow the acharyas only, Prabhuji. They don't follow anything else. But some devotees, they say that our acharya ask us to follow these things. That is what I understood, Prabhuji.
Oh, if someone's acharya asks them to follow, they can follow. No problem. But we all, as long as we all accept Srila Prabhupada as the Acharya.
No, Prabhupada only. They say the Prabhupada has us to follow. Varnashrama. That is the problem.
Of course. He did say, but that is why I sent that particular.
Yeah, Prabhuji. I heard, not for me, Prabhuji. Generally, I'm telling you.
That is why. Doubt is there. But then, if doubt is there, clarification is there.
Yes, Prabhuji.
That is why I said, what aspect of Varnashram, if you accept, it is not Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam. And if you cross this line, it becomes Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam. So what aspect of Varnashram we can accept, and in what mood we should accept, and how much to accept, and all of that is there. Otherwise, it becomes covered by, our bhakti becomes covered by karma.
Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you, Prabhuji Hareksh.
Pro, in Veda Vaisna, you can get the book, go to the writings of past Acharyas, and then other writings of Acharyas will be there. In that, you will get the
Chaitanya Bhagavat.
And the last chapter, 65th verse, first Adilila.
Okay. Wait.
You should not go to Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur books. You should go to other Acharyas.
Okay.
Other writings.
Let me just... 2019. Okay, 2019. Writings of
past other Acharyas,
past Acharyas. In that, I should go to other Acharyas. In that, I go to Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat.
Yes.
So in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat.
Adilila, last Adi chapter.
Adilila, last chapter. The Lord's travel to Gaya. 65th verse. Yes. Okay, let me go to 64th verse. Is there a... Okay, yes. Almost there. Okay. 65th verse. Adilila. Chaitanya Bhagavat Adilila.
Yeah, same.
65th verse.
From here you can start.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. Falgu Tirte Kari Balakara Pindadan Tabegela Giri Shringe Preta Gayastan. The Lord went to the Falgu River and offered oblations to the forefathers with sand. Then the Lord went to Preta Gaya on top of the hill. Commentary by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. Falgu River flows under a bed of sand at Gaya. There is a system for offering oblations with sand at this place in order to bewilder and deceive fruitive workers, Gaurahari enacted the pastimes of offering oblations to his forefathers with sand.
A previous verse, bro. Sorry, sir. 64.
तबे प्रभु ताने स्थाने अनुमति लैया तीर्थ श्राद्ध करिबारे वसीला आसिया. The Lord then took leave of Ishwarapuri and went to offer oblations to his forefathers. Commentary by Srila Vishwanatha Chakrabarty, by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. He says, it is the prescribed duty for one to offer oblations to his forefathers when visiting a holy place. Gaurahari enacted the pastime of taking permission from Ishwarapuri path and then offering oblations at Gaya according to prescribed duties. The path of pure devotional service and the path of fruitive activities based on the smritis are not similar. Only after rejecting fruitive activities can one enter into spiritual life. Since materially conditioned living entities are not self-realized or God-realized, before hearing the topics of the Lord, they take to fruitive activities such as offering oblations to their forefathers and the demigods according to the external considerations.
Like this is the comment by Bhaktisiddhanta.
So, anyways.
Of course, that statement is also there, bro. I'm not able to see. I'll just see and let you know where. This is also mentioned.
Why did the Lord do it?
Yes, that was I will next, just check.
Next it is mentioned, na, to bewilder the...
Yes, that is also there.
Yeah,
I'll just find in 2 minutes by the time.
Okay. So therefore, we should understand not that the Lord did. Okay, the Lord did. And the Lord did for what purpose? And whether he wants his practitioners of pure devotees to follow that exact same thing, that the acharyas have to shine light on that. That should be very clear. Otherwise, you may say that, for this Pitrupaksha and all these things, exactly why devotees should follow. And it's very important. Yes, it is important. But what do the devotees learn from this? If the devotees feel very grateful to their pitrus or their ancestors, then they should more sincerely practice devotional service. That's what it means. Yata taror mula nishechanena trupyanti tatskanda bujopashaka. Pranopaharacha itendriyanam tataiva sarvarhanam achyutejya. So when the root is watered, then automatically the flowers, fruits, branches, everything gets water. That is our understanding. So another point that is actually mentioned is that, yes, Prabhuji, but practically you see, devotees don't have that gratitude towards their parents and ancestors because they think they need not have that kind of gratitude. Because they are practicing devotional service. So this is one of the arguments. And this is a very valid, genuine argument because it is often observed in that way also. So now, what is the cause of this? What is the cause of this observation that devotees are not seen to show any kind of gratitude towards their forefathers and parents like that. That is because of immature preaching. Immature explanation of this Devarshi Bhutaptana Naam Pitranam verse. That does not mean you don't have to show gratitude. All that it means is that you don't have to show gratitude through the way of karma. There is a way of showing gratitude through the path of bhakti. That's what it means. That does not say that you should not have gratitude. So if someone is teaching like that, that is wrong. So their rationale is, because devotees are not showing any gratitude, therefore, at least if they are inspired to do these pitrukaryas and these kind of things, then actually they will feel grateful. I said, this makes no sense to me. This makes no sense to me. There are people who do lot of Pitrukaryas, but you see that most of them have put their parents in old age homes and not taking care of them. What kind of an expression of gratitude is that? So as if by performing Pitrukaryas one develops gratitude. Is that what it means? So if devotees are not seen to show gratitude towards their parents and forefathers, then they should be guided properly to show gratitude towards their parents and forefathers. Not that because devotees are seen not to have gratitude towards their parents and forefathers, suddenly you introduce karma, you know. So as if introduction of karma will induce gratitude in their heart. This is not true. It is not that Pitrukarya induces gratitude. Actually, Pitrukarya is supposed to be a byproduct of one's expression of gratitude. So therefore, it is very important, you know. So to say that just because devotees are seen not to have gratitude, so therefore introduce karma, this is not true. So as if introducing karma will automatically introduce gratitude. As if people following karma are the most grateful people, and people following bhakti are the most ungrateful people. Is it like that? What do we learn? Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvair gunestatra samasate sura. So, therefore, the solution for immature preaching of bhakti is actually mature preaching of bhakti. The solution of immature preaching of bhakti is not preaching of karma. You know, one should not, you know, that defeats the whole purpose. Yes, have people been immaturely preached in bhakti? Very much yes. Because of which people have, you know, many devotees behave in very insensitive ways towards their parents, towards their friends, towards their relatives. They behave in very rude, immature, ridiculous ways. No doubt about it. So what is the solution? The solution is mature preaching of devotional service. Not that you start preaching them karma. If maturity is their problem, if the problem with them is maturity, if they will become immature practitioners of devotional service, you teach them karma, they will become immature practitioners of karma also. Because the problem is not with devotional service or karma. The problem is either with immature preaching or the recipients are immature. Okay. So, if the preacher is immature, then he will teach devotional service in an immature way, and the solution will be disaster. But if the same preacher is not working on his immaturity, and if he preaches karma, then the same disaster will come, you know. So, or if the recipient is immature, and if he immaturely practices bhakti and causes havoc, and if his immaturity is not addressed, and instead of bhakti, if he start karma, then there will be same mistake. You know, he will become an immature practitioner of karma, because the problem was neither with bhakti nor with karma. The problem was with immaturity of either the preacher or the recipient. So yes, it is very much true that there has been a very immature preaching of bhakti, because of which lot of insensitive dealings and havoc has been caused on a societal level, on family level, no doubt about it. So the solution for that is mature preaching of bhakti, not karma. One should understand that very clearly. Yes, Radha Pramodtu.
Bro, actually in the introduction of this chapter, it is given 9th and 10th verse. 29th
I will
verse
make you the co-host, Prabhu. I will make you the co-host. You only share the screen.
Oh, wait a minute, bro. I'm in mobile. I'll join through laptop.
Oh, no. No need. So you tell me. I will. You can.
Introduction, you can go, bro. Introduction of that.
Introduction of Adi Leela.
Yes.
Okay, just hold on.
Not introduction of introduction of this chapter.
Okay, introduction of this chapter, not Adi Leela. Okay.
Adi Leela only this chapter, second.
Adi Leela, this chapter, introduction. Okay. I will go there. Just give me 1 second. I'm almost there. Okay. So where? Here.
This is second para, third line, fourth line.
Okay. Let me read the second para only. I will share the screen here. During the time when Sri Gaurasundara was enjoying his pastimes in Navadvip as the crest jewel of teachers, the philosophies of the atheists and the smarthas were being quickly propagated. Even hearing the name of Bhakti Yoga was rare. The sinful people were on unnecessarily criticizing the Vaishnavas. Considering that the proper time had arrived to manifest himself, Sri Gaurasundara enacted the pastime of going to Gaya for performing worldly fruitive rituals in order to refute the atheistic and smartha philosophies as well as to bewilder averse persons. In order to bewilder the atheists, the Lord displayed the pastime of being attacked with fever. Okay. Anyways. So
this is pro 9th and 11th is more clear and 29th also.
Which one?
9th and 11th verse.
Oh, 9th and 11th verse. 9, 11 and?
29.
29.
The 9th and 11th, this one.
9th and
10th. Perfect.
Okay. The Lord thus desired to manifest himself, but he thought he should first visit Gaya. The supremely independent Lord Gaurasundara desired to see the holy place of Gaya. Commentary. Vaishala Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. The purport of the Lord's visit to Gaya is as follows. Sri Gaurasundara desired to visit Gaya in order to personally enact the pastime of accepting the dress of a devotee prior to exhibiting his opulence of being the only shelter of his devotees. So this was the prime purpose of his going to Gaya, to accept the dress of a devotee. One time, the city of Gaya was greatly disturbed by the Buddhists. The Buddhists started a powerful movement there for the purpose of destroying Karmakanda. In order to deliver those who follow Vedic principles from the attack of the Buddhist revolutionaries, Gadadhar Vishnu placed his lotus feet on the head of Gayasura. The fruitive workers were engaged in torturing Yajneshwara Vishnu in various ways. That is why the Lord manifested his incarnation of Buddha and exhibited the misuse of Karmakanda before the eyes of the public, thus refuting its false misconceptions. Okay, that is understood.
Gaurasundara
enacted the pastime of visiting Gaya in order to cheat and bewilder ordinary mundane people who are attached to fruitive activities and ignorant of the purport of the Vedas. Since the philosophy of Charvak was very prominent at that time, faith in the concept of reincarnation was totally lost. Although the concept of reincarnation was accepted by the Buddhists, the transcendental variegated pastime of the Supreme Lord, who is full in six opulences, did not find a place in their understanding.
So this is the purpose I am feeling. One of the purpose is enacting is, this is the purpose. Gaurasundara enacted the pastime visiting in order to cheat and bewilder ordinary people who are attached to fruitive activities and ignorant of purport
of the Vedas. Correct. Yeah.
And yes. 29th also same. One more point.
Okay. 29th. So 29th. Snanakari Pitrudeva Kariya Archan Gayate Pravishta Haila Sri Sachinanda. I think this is the verse I was thinking. After taking bath and offering oblations to his forefather, Sri Sachinanda entered Gaya. Okay.
This oh, was not this. Sorry. 65th so, only. Sorry.
No, 29th.
Ah, 29th. Yeah.
In order to deceive and bewilder the smarthas who are attached to fruitive activities, Sri Gaurasundara purified himself by taking bath and displayed the pastime of offering oblations to his forefathers according to the Karmakanda injunctions in order to fulfill his debts to his forefathers. According to worldly customs mentioned in the Dharma Shastras, one should take bath in a river before entering a holy place. The Lord exhibited the pastime of following this injunction and then entered Gaya. Simply by undeviated worship of Lord Achyuta, the controller of all controllers, all one's debts are cleared. And those attached householders who lack faith in this statement assist their forefathers in again receiving grass bodies in this world by offering them oblations, imagining that they have become ghosts. Like that. Okay. Okay. So, yes. So, this is very, very important that we do understand that, you know, even though certain things Krishna did, but certain things Lord Ramachandra did, but what to take, what should the devotees take from that? Actually, we are wholly and solely and helplessly dependent on the explanation of the acharyas for that, not that we whimsically follow anything. Okay, there are some comments, questions in the chat box. Let's quickly look at it. She Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jayavadharma says, one has got full faith in bhakti and chanting and hearing about the Lord, then he is considered fully surrendered. Yeah. If one has got faith in bhakti, full faith in bhakti and chanting and hearing about the Lord. Yeah. So now that full faith in bhakti can be now, let me ask a question. Okay. I am actually very artistically, you can say, very compromised. So assume, if you are unable to imagine, just imagine this is a cup, water cup. Okay. And this is a water cup. Okay. This is the best water cup that I can draw. Okay. So imagine this is a water cup. This is water cup 1. This is water cup 2. Okay. Now water cup 1 is filled with water up to the brim. Now water cup 2 is filled with water up to the brim. Okay. Now, there is a water cup 3, which is also quite huge. Okay. This is filled half with water. And half with some other liquid. Okay. So this is 100 ml. This is 500 ml. And 250 ml oil, let's say. Okay. So now, my question to you. Please go to the chat box and answer this question. Okay. Okay. So now, in this, because Shyam Mukund Prabhu asked this question, the first person, does he have full faith in bhakti or not? What is your understanding? One, number one, does he have full faith in bhakti or not? Or let me ask you, is the glass full with water or not? Okay, right? And the second glass, is it full with water or not? Right, yes. So now the third glass, does it have more water than glass number one? The third glass, does it have more water than glass number one? Yes, no? So the third glass has 250 ml water. The first glass has 100 ml water. Now, what is the difference between the two? What is the difference between the two? What is the difference between the two? You can raise your hands and answer also, no problem. Yeah. The first glass has 100 ml water only, but it is fully water. But the third glass, even though it has more water, 250 ml, but it is 250 ml oil. Correct, na? So, therefore, there is a difference between strength of faith and purity of faith. There is a difference between strength of faith and purity of faith. So, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, here it is quoted, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that one who has got full faith in bhakti, that full faith can be weak faith also. Okay. Weak faith is okay, but it should not get mixed. Okay. So full faith means, even if it is a 100 ml glass, the 100 ml glass should have only water, not oil. It should not be mixed with oil. That is what it means. That is the meaning of sarvatmanaya sharanam sharanyam. Sarvatmana sharanam means your surrender is only to Krishna. Now that surrender may be weak, but it should not be mixed with jnana, karma, demigods, etc. That one should be very clear. Okay. There is another question. Till the time we are not pure devotees, should we observe these rituals? Now, in the morning Bhagavatam class, I had requested devotees to hear that 4-session series. Now, why I asked? Because without this foundational understanding, I cannot keep describing these concepts again and again. So, that is why I requested again and again, please listen to those 4 sessions. Because in those 4 sessions, I have very clearly explained what is it we are practicing. Are we practicing pure devotional service or not? So, in essence, if I have to explain this, we are practitioners of pure devotional service, but we have not perfected it. But we are certainly not practicing mixed devotional service. We are not practicing mixed devotional service. We are practicing pure devotional service. We are not... So pure devotional service in practice is not mixed devotional service. It is not that many times, oftentimes people think, till you perfect it, it is mixed devotional service. No, it is not like that. Therefore, it is called as pure devotional service in practice, pure devotional service at the stage of bhava, and pure devotional service at the stage of prema. All the while, it is pure devotional service only. So we are not mixed devotional. We are not mixed devotees. We are pure devotees, but practicing pure devotees. We are not perfected pure devotees. Okay, practicing pure, there is a difference between practicing pure devotees and mixed devotees. Okay, so these should not be mixed. This is the essence of that particular 4 sessions. Okay, so I don't know if this is a comment or our advancement depends on from whom we are taking guidance from. Yeah. Yes, that is true. That is true. Yeah. So, why should he do it to bewilder the smarthas? They will still be following it. Yeah. The smarthas are expected to follow it. The smarthas are expected to follow it. But when the smarthas come in touch with pure devotion, pure devotees, and if their heart gets transformed, then they will give it up. But otherwise, they should continue to follow it. Because they are, smarthas means what? They are qualified for smritis. You know, these smritis. So, as long as they have that qualification, they should follow. So, therefore, he does that. Okay. Yes, Radha Pramod.
There is actually one concern with these people who propagate, at least do some this thing, rituals and all this Shraddha and all. What they feel is it makes people more irresponsible. Already they are irresponsible. And we just tell, okay, no, just chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds and remaining whole day you can do whatever you want. At least now they become more irresponsible. They are not practicing also except for basic bare minimum. They don't practice much, they don't do anything. And now they stop doing even some basic rituals also. So it's like they feel that they lose the whatever basic culture, everything is lost. And they may even lose because at least that helps them to come to mode of goodness. And now they continue to remain in mode of passion and continue to do whatever they want. And even if somebody is chanting four rounds also, he says, yeah, I'm also doing chanting. So that also makes them go away. And at least these rituals and all will help them to come to mode of goodness if they are doing at least some Sandhya Vandanam, Gayatri and Sandhya Vandanam they are doing. At least that will bring them to goodness. But now they are already in passion. They have taste for taste in ignorance and passion. And you are just telling, okay, you have pure devotional faith and good enough. No need to do all these things. So how do we argue?
Yeah, we don't want to argue with anyone. But just that, how do we understand? You know, because we are not attached to our opinions, but we wish to understand what is the right understanding. That should be the mode of approaching. If they have a valid point, we accept it. Okay. So now the point is, does chanting, will it help one come to mode of goodness or not? And or is it that only performing Sandhya Vandanam will help one to come to mode of goodness? This is a very, because when you present it this way, it seems very attractive. You know, oh yeah, we should come to mode of goodness, Prabhu. As if it is much more faster to come to mode of goodness by practicing rituals than by practicing devotional service. So this is very interesting. So I would say, if this is spoken in a way, then it may actually weaken their faith in the process of chanting. Actually, it may weaken their faith in the process of chanting and hearing that, oh, what is the use of your chanting and hearing? First, you should come to mode of goodness, and for coming to mode of goodness, you should perform the Sandhya Vandanam and all these rituals. So, which means one cannot come to mode of goodness by performing chanting, hearing, etc. So now,
here the point is, bro. Say now, what our criteria is? You just have pure devotional faith, then no need to do all these things. Now somebody says he is chanting only four rounds. And he says, bro, I want to go to Krishna. I don't want anything. I don't want jnana and karma. Now he is already stuck with tamoguna and rajoguna. Hardly is chanting. Okay. And now for him, he says, bro, I don't want anything. I am pure devotional faith. Now for him, should we recommend, we say, okay, bro, continue with pure devotional faith? Or we say, okay, at least do some basics so that this will help you to come goodness.
My question is, apart from hearing and chanting, are there absolutely no engagement within the pure devotional practices which can help him overcome his bad habits? Now, when Prabhupada went and preached to the hippies in the United States, did he, as a backup plan, did he carry the activities and rituals of karma so that they may not be able to, you know, they are very severely addicted to tamoguna and rajoguna, so we will give them some. So there are so many devotional activities which one can be engaged in to actually help them overcome the the problems of their addictions and attachment to the tamoguni and rajoguni activities. Are there absolutely nothing within the devotional realm, which can.
Yeah, yes, bro. There is another argument that is also given. This also I heard. Like, say, okay, we are saying that they made some engagements were given to the Westerners, and they were in so much passion and all. So they were given the service of book distribution and other ways of preaching and all. Now, what is the argument that is made is because they didn't have that cultural support. That's why after Prabhupada left, most of them, only 10% of Prabhupada disciples, they are able to practice. But in India, we are able to hold because they have that cultural support. So this is the cultural support that need to be maintained, because that will help a person to, because the proof that not many survived, but in India they are surviving. So the cultural support is helping them to survive. And more and more devotees come, more and more preaching happens in India because they have that cultural support, which is not possible. So now, why my India, even if America you go, most of the devotees who are there, they are Indians only, except for few, three, four, very handful of communities. Most of them, why Indians? Because they have that support. So that is the way to help people to come to that state.
Okay. Even if I agree this argument. Okay. To some extent, I do agree with this argument. But now, here what you are doing is, karma means culture. Bhakti is out of Vedic culture, or the practices of bhakti is out of Vedic culture. Is that what is your understanding? Is chanting now out of Vedic culture, or only if Sandhya Vandanam is within Vedic culture, is it like that? So within Vedic culture also, this is a very oversimplified, simplistic understanding of Vedic culture. Even within Vedic culture, actually every person followed their duties according to their adhikar. Temple deity worship is within Vedic realm, it is within the Vedic things. And chanting of the holy names was within the Vedic culture, but within the purview of devotional service. Hearing and discussing Srimad Bhagavatam is within the purview of devotional service, with us within the Vedic realm. So now, you have an oversimplified presentation of what Vedic culture is, and you say that, oh, Vedic culture. Yes, but in Vedic culture, everyone practiced activities according to their adhikar. Sve sve adhikare ya nishta saguna parikirtitah viparyayastu doshasyad. So Krishna says this. So even within Vedic culture, not everyone followed the same thing. Everyone followed according to their adhikar only. So therefore, to say that, to perform Sandhya Vandanam is Vedic, but other only chanting and all, where is the culture? If someone is chanting the holy names, is it not within culture? Is it not the culture? So
now, I have one more point for this. Say, like, now if you go to some traditional Madhva family, the mode of goodness, say, how much you can experience that mode of goodness in the family, how they follow the culture, or any Sri Vaishnava, very traditional family. Now, say, I just came, I am a corporate guy, and now I am just chanting, I am practicing pure devotional service. Now, for me to develop mode of goodness, so what are activities I have? I read, and I chant, and I hear Bhagavatam. And then weekly, once or twice, I am going to temple and I am doing self-service. Now, for me to come to that level of goodness, but if I am having, say, some other activities that are practiced, which are there in the very traditional families, then the quality of goodness, say, I am every day, some havana is going on. I know it is, the environment in the house is very, very sattvic, and then you have some other activities which they do rituals. So immediately my amount of, like, Sandhya Vandanam is done, two children are initiated in the under a Smartha Brahmana, and they are doing the Sandhya Vandanam two times in a day, and so now immediately that changes a atmosphere into very passionate to mode of goodness, which is conducive for bhakti also.
Well, it is. I am not sure if it is conducive for bhakti, because if already you are introducing, see, I can show you devotee's family where there is absolutely no mixture of karma practices or anything, but they have made the practices of bhakti so relishable and nice. You go to Yamuna Mataji's Banbihari ashram, you know, you don't even have to go there. Just read the description of that, you know. So, you know, see how culture is made. Culture is made when sincere practitioners start practicing their things very nicely and create a legacy like that. So you go, so you go there and then you see. So there is no practice of Sandhyavandanam. There is no practice of all these other karma rituals. But actually, you know, it is so spiritually enlivening and empowering, you know. So therefore, and see, even I grew up in a Sri Vaishnava family. So, it is not that I do not know. And I have my cousin brothers, cousin sisters, all of them, I know what they are practicing, what they are doing. So, therefore, I do understand. But the point is, you know, bhakti also, the bhakti culture is also within the Vedic culture only. So, what I am telling is, understand what the bhakti culture brings in. You know, the dress code. We follow a dress code, right? Dhoti kurta. Even though you're at home, you wear dhoti kurta. It's a culture. It's an aspect of culture. So I'm not telling culture is not important. I'm telling understand what aspect of the culture is relevant for the practitioners of devotional service and accept that those aspects of culture. That's what I'm telling. So rather than in the name of culture, you accept everything, you know, that we cannot. Then it becomes jnana karma, the avrita bhakti. It becomes covered by jnana and karma. So, yes, if in a Madhva family they have that culture, similar culture can be incorporated in devotees' families also without, you know, accepting practices which cover one's bhakti. That is possible. That's what I am telling. Rather than accepting all the practices, you know, like... you know, there are so many theories which are going on. You know, people suddenly, all of a sudden, so many people start piercing their ears. So now you ask them, why are you doing this? They said, oh, our ancestors used to pierce our ears. So then I asked them, your grandfather used to pierce his ears? Then he was scratching his head and wondering, I don't remember, but maybe his grandfather must have pierced his ears. I said, I mean, I'm telling, who gave this kind of teaching, you know? If you know,
this regular homa also in temple, bro. Now, how it comes, like, in temples, they are doing regular homa. Now, they'll start doing in house also. No. They're doing in temple. Yeah. Everything that is done in temple, that will come to house also.
I mean, we are supposed, the teaching that we get is, yes, we don't want to give up our, you know, we don't want to trivialize our ancestors. But the thing is, the teaching that we get is, prime teaching is Mahajano Yena Gatasapanta. Follow the Mahajans. But suddenly there is a movement where people are telling, follow your ancestors. But whether the ancestors themselves followed their ancestors or not, we do not know. Therefore, Prabhupada created Guru Sadhu Shastra. Suddenly group of people, they come, ears pierce suddenly. Why? Oh, my ancestors used to pierce their ears. Have you seen your ancestors pierce their ears? They don't know. So these kind of things, you know, new waves, you know, because probably, you know, bhakti is not made that, you know, probably presented in a very attractive way. So suddenly newer and newer and newer things, you know, this, they keep creeping. Anyways, there is no end to this topic. We will.
Yes. Because now two things, bro. What is happening now? This Nitya Homa in temple that is started. Now people do at home also, because they say in temple they are doing. and second thing is Sandhya Vandanam. So these two things they feel is what will change the environment in the house, because they are seeing in the temple. So these are the things that are that is what is understood by.
From today, I am also willing to start it if Prabhupada or Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Bhaktivinoda Thakur has recommended it. From today, I will start actually. So otherwise, I cannot. I'm sorry. Anyway, okay. There is one comment in the comment or question. Hare Krishna TV advertises about performing Pitru Paksha, but by chanting and reading Srimad Bhagavatam, of course. So how do we understand the acknowledgement of Pitru Pakshas by a TV channel which propagates Krishna consciousness? Well, I am not running Hare Krishna TV. I think you must probably go and ask them. You know, if I was running Hare Krishna TV, probably I would not do it. So if I was running Hare Krishna TV, I would not do it. But since I am not running, I cannot speak for them. So I cannot speak for them, and I am not going to apologize for them, because I have nothing to do with Hare Krishna TV. Yeah, sometimes I have given, they requested me to give some courses in Hare Krishna TV. I did, but I am not running Hare Krishna TV. So I don't know. I have no idea. Anyways. Let's get to Trinavarta finally. But why is there no standard for Krishna consciousness? Well, standard comes when we clearly understand what our acharyas have presented. The problem is that now people are very busy, you know, searching everywhere. So that's why probably there is no standard. If we are very clear and chaste with what our acharyas are recommending, probably we will understand the standard. But because we are busy searching everywhere, probably that's why we are not seeing a standard. Anyways, at least, you know, as long as we are connected to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra and we are properly guided, we are safe. Okay. Let us continue with Trinavarta has to come. So Trinavarta has been waiting for a long time because we have been busy discussing something else. So Trinavarta is waiting. Okay. Ekadaroham arudam lalayanti sutam sati garimanam shishor vodum nasehe girikotavat. Ekada, once upon a time or one day, a year after Krishna's appearance. This is not very explicitly stated. So, you know, so Putana, 6 months, 6 days. Shakatasura, 3 months. Now Trinavarta is 1 year. Okay, yeah, a year has passed. So, okay. Sati, Mother Yashoda. Sutam, Aroham, Arudam Lalayanti. She put Krishna on her lap and Lalayanti. She was petting Krishna. She was patting Krishna. Shishoho Garimanam Girikutavat. Suddenly, Garimanam, he became very, very heavy. Girikutavat, like that of a mountain peak. Krishna became very heavy. Vodum na sehe. She could no longer bear his weight. Okay. One day, Mother Yashoda was patting Krishna on her lap. And suddenly, he became heavy like a mountain peak. So Shri Vishnu Jagda Guru says, what use are all these things for me, the Lord of all wealth? So this event took place when Krishna was 1 year old. This is mentioned. The Bhagavatam says, Ekahayana asino priyamano vihayasa daityena yas trinavartam. The demon Trinavarta took away Krishna when the Lord was 1 year old. Yashoda felt great bliss by placing Krishna on her lap and lifting him up in the air with her two hands. Suddenly, Krishna became as heavy as a mountain top, and Yashoda could no longer hold him. Krishna knew that Trinavarta wanted to kidnap Yashoda along with himself. Krishna knew it. Okay. Therefore, Krishna displayed his Aishwarya Shakti in order to prevent any pain coming to Yashoda. Becoming heavier than the heaviest, Krishna forced Yashoda to place him on the ground. Yashoda can only lift me a little, but I want to play in the sky, Krishna thought. Yashoda may be picking me up and throwing me up and catching me back. You know, I may go 1 foot high, 2 feet high, but I want to go at least a kilometer or a few kilometers high. I want to play in the sky. Desiring like this, Krishna let the Asura take him away. Bhumau nidaya tam gopi vismita bhara pidita mahapurusham adadyau jagatamasa karmasu. Jagatam, feeling the child to be as heavy as the entire universe, bhara pidita, and therefore being troubled by his weight, thinking that perhaps the child was being attacked by some other ghost or demon. This is not explicitly mentioned here. Vismita Gopi, being astonished, Mother Yashoda, tam bhumau nidaya, putting the child on the ground, mahapurusham adadyau, she began to think of Narayana. So she put the child down and she started thinking of Narayana. Foreseeing disturbances, she called for the Brahmanas to counteract the heaviness. This is all implied. This is not directly. And then she engaged in her household affairs, karmasu. So this is not there directly in the verse. This is Prabhupada's purported translation. Foreseeing disturbances, she called for the Brahmanas to counteract this heaviness. It's not directly there in the verse. And she engaged in her other. She had no alternative other than to remember the lotus feet of Narayana, for she could not understand that Krishna was the original source of everything. This is also implied. This is all not directly there in the verse. Okay. Feeling the child to be heavy, she put him down astonished. Mother Yashoda began to think of Narayana and continued with her work. Srila Vishnu Jagda Guru says, being disturbed, Yashoda put Krishna on the ground as she wondered how her son had suddenly become so heavy. Maybe some demon has done this. Fearing this, Yashoda took shelter of Narayana, the Lord of the universe. Yashoda glanced upward to Vaikuntha and in meditation said, O Lord, you have given this son, so now you must protect him. Then in great anxiety, Yashoda went out to call some Brahmanas to perform the Swastyayana Karma. So this is what Srila Prabhupada also writes here. What is there in the purport? Prabhupada puts it in the translation only. दैत्यो नाम्ना तृणावर्तः कंसभृत्य प्रणोदितः चक्रवात स्वरूपेण जहारासीनमर्भकम् आसीनम् अर्भकम् वैल् द चैल्ड् वास् सिटिङ्ग् आन् द ग्रौण्ड् तृणावर्तः नाम्ना दैत्यः अ डीमन् नेम्ड् तृणावर्त कंसभृत्यः हु वास् अ सर्वेण्ट् आफ् कंसस् चक्रवातस्वरूपेण केम् देर् एस् अ वर्ल्ड् विण्ड् प्रणोदितः अट् कंसस् इन्स्टिगेशन् जहार अण्ड् वेरि ईसिलि केरीड् द चैल्ड् अवे इन् टु दि एर् So, at that time, a demon named Trinavarta came as a whirlwind at Kamsa's instigation. And carried the child away. Just at that time, Trinavarta came and stole the child. By the influence of his Aishwarya Shakti, Krishna became so light that Trinavarta could lift him. Just then, he became so heavy, like a mountain peak. So, with that weight, definitely Trinavarta would not have been able to pick up Krishna. But he became light. So light that Trinavarta could easily lift him up. Gokulam sarvam avrinvan mushnam chakshum sirenubihi irayan sumahagora shabdena pradishodishah. Gokulam sarvam avrinvan, covering the whole land of Gokula, renubihi, with particles of dust. Mushnam chakshumsi, the demon acting as a strong whirlwind covered everyone's vision. Mushnam means to cover. Chakshumsi means one's eyes. Irayan pradisho dishaha and began vibrating everywhere. Sumaha gora shabdena with a greatly fearful sound. So, covering the land of Gokula with dust. He covered everyone's vision and began vibrating a great sound. So, a tumultuous sound reverberated in all directions. मुहूर्तम् अभवद्गोष्ठम् रजसा तमसावृतम् सुतम् यशोदा नापश्यत् तस्मिन् न्यस्तवतीयतः मुहूर्तम् अभवत् फॉर अ मोमेंट गोष्ठम् होल पैस्चरिंग ग्राउंड रजसा तमसावृतम् वाज ओवरकास्ट विद डेंस डार्कनेस फ्रॉम द डस्ट स्टॉर्म सुतम् यशोदा नापश्यत् मदर यशोदा कुड नॉट फाइंड हर सन तस्मिन् न्यस्तवतीयतः फ्रॉम वेयर शी हैड प्लेस कृष्ण शी कुड नॉट फाइंड हिम देयर For a moment, whole Vraja was overcast with darkness and Mother Yashoda could not find Krishna. Yashoda did not see baby Krishna there where she had left him. नापश्यत् कश्चन आत्मानं परं चापि विमोहितः तृणावर्त निसृष्टाभिः शर्कराभिर् उपद्रुतः शर्कराभिः बिकॉज ऑफ द बिट्स ऑफ सैंड तृणावर्त निसृष्टाभिः थ्रोन अबाउट बाय तृणावर्त नापश्यत् कश्चन आत्मानं पीपल कुड नॉट सी देमसेल्व्स परं चापि और एनीवन एल्स Vimohitaha upadrutaha, and thus they were illusioned and disturbed. Unable to see anyone, they became disturbed and illusioned. इति खर पवन चक्र पांशु वर्षे सुत पदवीं अबला विलक्ष्य माता अति करुणम अनुस्मरन्त्य शोचत भुवि पतिता मृतवत्सकायता गौः पांशु वर्षे बिकॉज ऑफ द डस्ट स्टॉर्म खर पवन चक्र स्टर्ड अप बाय द स्ट्रांग व्हर्लविंड अबला माता मदर यशोदा सुत पदवीं अविलक्ष्य she could find no trace of her son nor she could understand why भुवि पतिता thus she fell down on the ground मृतवत्सक यथा गौः just like a cow who had lost her calf अति करुणम अनुस्मरन्त्य शोचत and began to lament very pitifully unable to find her son mother Yashoda fell to the ground and began to lament pitifully Yashoda could not see her child because of the thick layers of dust showering down from the whirlwind demon रुदितं रुदितं अनुनिशम्य तत्र गोप्यो वृषमनुतप्तदियो श्रुपूर्णमुख्यः रुरुदुर् अनुपलभ्य नन्दसोनुं पवन उपारतपांशु वर्षवेगे पवन उपारतपांशु वर्षवेगे when the force of the dust storm and the winds subsided gopyah Yashoda's friends, the other gopis, tatra, they approached Mother Yashoda, ruditam anunishamya, hearing her pitiful crying. Nanda sonum anupalabhya, not seeing Krishna present there. Brusham anutapta diyo, they too felt very much aggrieved. Ruruduhu, and joined Mother Yashoda in crying. Ashru purna mukhyaha, with their eyes completely covered with tears. When the storm subsided, the gopis ran to Mother Yashoda, and when they realized that Krishna was not present, they too joined her in crying. After the gusts of wind blew away the dust, the gopis heard crying from Yashoda's house. They also began crying as they converged on Yashoda's house from all directions. So, तृणावर्तः शान्तरयो वात्यारूपधरो हरन् कृष्णं नभो गतो गन्तुं नाशक्नोत् भूरि भारभृत् वात्यारूपधरो हैविंग अस्यूम द फॉर्म ऑफ अ फोर्सफुल विंड तृणावर्तः द डीमन तृणावर्त हरन् कृष्णं नभो गतो दे टुक कृष्णा वेरी हाई इन द स्काई भूरि भारभृत् बट व्हेन कृष्णा बिकेम हेवियर देन द डीमन Shantarayo, the demon had to stop his force. Gantum na shaknod, and he could not go any further. So Trinavarta took Krishna very high. But when Krishna became too heavy, Trinavarta could go no further. At first, Krishna was as light as a normal child, and Trinavarta lifted him high in the sky. When Krishna became heavy, however, Trinavarta slowed down. Within seconds, Trinavarta could not carry Krishna any further, so he stopped moving. So he stopped moving. Okay, just give me 1 second. Okay. Tamashmanam manyamana atmano guru mattaya gale grihita utsrashtum nashaknod adbudarbakam. Atmano guru mattaya, because of Krishna's weight, tam ashmanam manyamana, Trinavarta considered him to be like a great mountain or a hunk of iron. Ashma is iron. Gale grihita, but because Krishna had caught the demon's neck, utsrashtum nashaknod, the demon was unable to throw him off. Adbhutarbakam, he therefore thought of the child as wonderful, since he could neither bear the child nor cast aside the burden. So Trinavarta thought the child to be like a mountain or a hunk of iron, because Krishna caught hold of Trinavarta's neck, he could not throw him off too. After fulfilling his desire to fly in the sky and the desire of the celestial ladies of Swarga to see his incomparable beauty, Krishna prepared to kill Trinavarta. So he wanted to fly in the sky, he wanted to have an aerial ride, and at the same time he wanted to fulfill the desire of the celestial ladies who wanted to see the charming beauty of Krishna. So he went on the sky ride being carried by Trinavarta, but after some time, when that was satisfied, he prepared to kill Trinavarta. Krishna became so heavy that the demon felt he was carrying a mountain made of iron. Because Krishna was holding him by the neck, Trinavarta could not throw off the Lord. Playing the part of a small child, Krishna feigned fear of falling from the height and therefore clung to Trinavarta's neck. Just like, you know, a child would cling to one's neck. In the same way, he clung to Trinavarta's neck, as if he was very fearful. Okay. So, I think we will pause here. It's already 2:00. We will continue this discussion on Tuesday, next Tuesday. So, thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.